Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The death penalty is not in keeping with who we are as the United States. We are better than that. Thank you, President Biden, for following your faith and standing up for justice.
In a historic move, President Biden spares the lives of almost all 37 of 40 men on death row Monday by commuting their sentences to life without parole, just weeks before President-elect Donald Trump returns to the White House with a promise to restart and expand federal executions. We'll speak to two activists leading the call to abolish the death penalty, Sister Simone Campbell and Herman Lindsay, who spent 3 years on Florida death row before being exonerated. He's now executive director of Witness to Innocence. Then to the damning House ethics report on former Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, Trump's first pick for attorney general before he was forced to withdraw from consideration.
What struck me most was that the committee found substantial evidence that Gaetz paid thousands and thousands of dollars to women for sex and illicit drugs over a three-year period. Again, the drugs for himself, including ecstasy, marijuana, and for the women as well.
Then we look at what the toppling of the Assad regime means for the Kurds of Syria, as Turkey, Israel, and the United States all vie for greater control.
Turkey is just pushing all the buttons to exterminate Kurds from Syria and from Syria's future negotiations, from attacking to cooperating with HDS to reaching out to the world leaders to take the Syria's Kurds out of the question. Turkey is a big threat to Rojava and to northeast Syria at the moment.
We'll speak with Kurdish professor Özlem Konen. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Health officials in Gaza say Israel's attack the Al-Auda and the Kamel Adwan hospitals in northern Gaza while forcing wounded and sick patients to leave the Indonesian hospital in the latest assaults on Gaza's devastated health system. Israeli artillery shelled the third floor of the Al-Auda hospital while Israel detonated remote-controlled explosives just outside Kamel Adwan, which is barely functioning after repeated Israeli attacks. This is Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, director of Kamel Adwan, speaking on Al Jazeera.
Just now, one of the explosives planted by the Israeli army detonated. It caused a shockwave that shattered the hospital doors and windows on the west side. It also injured some of the patients and the very few medical staff left at the hospital. Roughly 20 people were hurt. A second, stronger explosion followed. It caused massive damage to the hospital's west wing, and more patients were injured. The entire west wing's doors and windows were all smashed, and the false ceiling collapsed.
At the United Nations, officials decried Israel's attacks on Gaza's health system.
The Director General of the World Health Organization said that the reports of bombardment near Kamel Adwan Hospital and orders to evacuate the hospital are deeply worrisome, adding that the hospital has been in the middle of fighting for too long and the lives of our patients are at risk. OCHA reiterates that civilians and civilian infrastructure, including hospitals, must be protected.
In other news from Gaza, an Israeli drone strike Sunday targeted an aid convoy in Deir al-Balah, killing four security guards. This comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Monday there has been, quote, some progress in talks over a ceasefire and hostage deal. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces have reportedly abducted about 100 Palestinians in raids over the past day. This comes as Palestinian Authority forces are clashing again with Palestinian militants in the Jenin refugee camp. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz reports Palestinian police have been firing rocket-propelled grenades at armed Palestinian fighters in Jenin, where Palestinian police killed a 17-year-old on Monday. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz has publicly confirmed for the first time that Israel was behind the assassination of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran in July. Katz made the comment as he threatened to target the heads of the Houthi movement in Yemen.
We will damage its strategic infrastructure, and we will behead its leaders, just as we did to Haniyeh, Sinwar, and Nasrallah, in Tehran, Gaza, and Lebanon. We will do it in Hodeidah and Sana'a. Whoever will raise his hand to Israel, his hand will be severed. The IDF's long arm will harm him and will settle the score.
In recent days, the United States and Israel have both bombed targets in Yemen, while Houthi forces fired a rocket at Tel Aviv that injured 16 people. Greenland is not for sale. That's the message from Greenland's prime minister after President-elect Donald Trump said it's, quote, an absolute necessity, unquote, for the United States to own and control Greenland, which is legally part of Denmark. Greenland's prime minister said, quote, our country's sovereignty and independence are not negotiable. Greenland is ours. We are not for sale and will never be for sale. We must not lose our long struggle for freedom, he said. On Sunday, Trump also threatened to take back the Panama Canal. In news from Latin America, lawmakers in El Salvador have voted to overturn a national ban on mineral mining that had been in place since 2017. El Salvador's president, Nayib Bukele, has pushed for the mining of gold and other minerals to resume despite protests by environmentalists who warn it could lead to increased water and soil contamination. In Havana, Cuba, a massive protest was held outside the U.S. Embassy Friday to denounce U.S. sanctions, which have been in place since 1962. Former Cuban President Raul Castro, who's now 93, took part in the protest. He said the U.S. sanctions had made 2024 one of the most difficult years for Cuba. Other Cubans taking part in the protest said they fear Donald Trump will make life even harder for Cubans.
We are here just as we were 20 years ago with our commander-in-chief Fidel Castro at the front to condemn the genocidal blockade that our people have suffered for more than 66 years, and also the inclusion of Cuba on the list of terrorist states. We are not a terrorist state. The coming of President Trump next January also foresees extreme measures against Cuba, and that is why we are here, to condemn any coercive act against the people of Cuba.
The House Ethics Committee released its investigation Monday into former Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, who Trump had picked to be his attorney general before the Florida politician withdrew from consideration. The report found Gaetz had paid tens of thousands of dollars for sex and drugs while in office. The report also found Gaetz had broken Florida's statutory rape law by paying a 17-year-old high school student for sex in 2017. The report was released Monday despite a last-ditch effort by Gaetz to block its release. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. We'll speak with a reporter from the Miami New Times. In other news from Congress, the family of 81-year-old Texas Republican Congressmember Kay Granger has confirmed she's experiencing dementia issues. Over the weekend, the Dallas Express revealed Granger had not voted in the House since July and that she had moved into a senior living facility. In March, she stepped down as chair of the influential House Appropriations Committee. She did not run for re-election in November. Democratic Congressmember Ro Khanna told the New York Times, quote, Kay Granger's long absence reveals the problem with a Congress that rewards seniority and relationships more than merit and ideas. We have a sclerotic gerontocracy, Congressman Khanna said. In labor news, Amazon's facing accusations it attempted to flood the picket line of striking workers in Queens, New York. On Saturday, water began gushing from an Amazon building close to where striking workers had gathered. One Amazon driver compared the flow of water from the building to a fire hydrant on full blast. In these times, as reporting, the Teamsters have filed a written complaint with the New York City Law Department. In other labor news, the Starbucks strike has expanded to stores in Boston, Dallas, and Portland, Oregon. As of Monday afternoon, the Starbucks strike had closed 59 Starbucks stores across the country. Naomi Martinez is a striking Starbucks worker in Burbank, California.
Starbucks workers are on strike today here in LA and the surrounding area, protesting against the outstanding unfair labor practice violations that the company has still failed to settle with our union. Additionally, our path forward that we forged with the company in February has been violated by the company for a few months now, and we will no longer accept poor bargaining and bad faith bargaining.
Missouri Governor Mike Parson is facing criticism from civil rights groups for commuting the sentence of a white police detective who was convicted of fatally shooting Cameron Lamb, a 26-year-old black man, in 2019. The detective, Eric DeVolcanaire, shot and killed Lamb, who is backing his truck into his own garage. DeVolcanaire was convicted and sentenced to 6 years in prison. Gwendolyn Grant, president and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Kansas City, said, quote, by freeing a convicted officer who unlawfully killed Cameron Lamb, a young black man, the governor has made it crystal clear that black lives do not matter in the state of Missouri under his leadership, unquote. In Atlanta, Georgia, the parents of the slain environmental activist Manuel Esteban Terán have sued three police officers who were involved in their death in 2023. The activist, known as Tortuguita, was shot 57 times when officers raided a protest encampment set up to fight the construction of a massive new police training center in Atlanta known as Cop City. The former head of the Washington, D.C. Police Intelligence Unit has been convicted on charges he tipped off far-right Proud Boys leader Henry Enrique Tarrio that a warrant was out for his arrest days before the January 6th insurrection. The police official, Shane LeMond, was found guilty of obstructing an investigation and making false statements to federal law enforcement officials. In Northern California, more than 500 residents have joined a class action lawsuit in an effort to block future U.S. military aid to Israel over Gaza. The lawsuit targets Democratic Congress members Jared Huffman and Mike Thompson. The lawsuit was filed by the group Taxpayers Against Genocide. Seth Donnelly is the group's lead organizer.
We want to go to where the source is that controls our tax dollars, and that's Congress. They have power of the purse. And our two reps in the House who voted, and that's Mike Thompson for some of the counties, and the other one is Jared Huffman for the other counties. They both voted on April 20th to send $26 billion more in military aid to Israel. And by that point, it was the evidence of genocide was overwhelming.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden spared the lives of 37 of 40 federal death row prisoners. On Monday, Biden commuted their sentences to life without parole, just weeks before President-elect Donald Trump returns to the White House with a promise to restart federal executions. In a statement, Biden said, quote, I am more convinced than ever that we must stop the use of the death penalty at the federal level. In good conscience, I cannot stand back and let a new administration resume executions that I halted, he said. Biden campaigned in 2020 on ending the federal death penalty and directed the Justice Department to issue a moratorium on federal executions, which they did. Brian Stevenson, the founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative, praised Biden's decision, calling it, quote, an important turning point in ending America's tragic and error-prone use of the death penalty, unquote. A Trump spokesperson, meanwhile, slammed the decision as abhorrent. There were 13 federal executions during Trump's first term as president. While Biden commuted the sentences of nearly all death row prisoners, there are three men who carried out mass killings who did not receive clemency. Dylan Roof, who killed nine black parishioners at the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina in 2015. Boston Marathon bomber Jokhar Tsarnaev. And Robert Bowers, who attacked Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue in 2018, killing 11 congregants in the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history. This action comes after years of advocacy by civil rights and Catholic groups. Last week, he had a phone call with Pope Francis, who reportedly called for the sentences of death row prisoners to be commuted. But for more, we're joined by two guests in Washington, D.C., Sister Simone Campbell is with us. She's the former executive director of the Network Lobby for Catholic Social Justice. She's the recipient of the 2022 Presidential Medal of Freedom. And from Miami, Florida, we're joined by Herman Lindsay, the executive director of Witness to Innocence, which advocates to end the death penalty. He was wrongfully convicted in 2006 in Florida, spent 3 years on death row before being exonerated by the Florida Supreme Court in 2009. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Herman Lindsay, let's begin with you in Florida. First, respond to what President Biden has done.
I think what President Biden has done has been a great thing. It's a great historical moment. I know three other presidents has in the past commuted a death sentence before. No one has ever done it in such a mass capacity. But I think Biden's act shows that leaders can be humane and bring humanity back in our justice system.
And Sister Simone Campbell in Washington, D.C., you campaigned for a long time on this issue as the Network Lobby for Catholic Social Justice. Explain, if you understand, the decision that Biden made and what it took.
Well, I think this was President Biden putting his conscience into action, that he had said back in 2020 that he opposed the death penalty, but it has taken this long for the commutation of these sentences, mostly because he couldn't get Congress to act. That was where the roadblock is yet again, is that our country's congressional function is not working. So he had to take this move to commute the sentences. But I think the most important piece for me as a person of faith is that he shares that faith and put it into action in a pretty courageous way, to speak out about the needs of healing the criminal justice system that too often is wrong and acts on behalf of our society. That is a travesty and acts erroneously on our behalf. He took care of that for these individuals. I am so grateful for his courage in making that happen.
And Sister Campbell, can you talk about the position of the Vatican?
Well, Pope Francis has made it abundantly clear a couple of years ago in writing in the encyclical that he wanted the end of the death penalty. He started this year saying, let's this year be the year that we end the death penalty in a global way. And then his very specific conversations with President Biden about his role in being able to make a difference. I think it's a tribute to all of those who worked on this issue that the Pope was included in that campaign. His heart is the heart of life, of giving life wherever we are. And if we're pro-life, then we need to be opposing the death penalty. That's how we stand together.
On Monday, Democracy Now! Reached Cantor Michael Zusman, a former prison chaplain, co-founder of L'Chaim, Jews Against the Death Penalty. He responded to the news of Biden commuting 37 of the 40 death row sentences.
On behalf of the 3,700-plus members of L'Chaim, which means to life, L'Chaim, Jews Against the Death Penalty, we applaud President Biden for commuting and saving the lives of 37 human beings. And I can say without equivocation that we stand against the death penalty in every single case without exception. And that includes the shooter of the Tree of Life Synagogue. And that includes the others in line for state killing on federal death row and on military death row. We believe, as did Elie Wiesel, who is a Holocaust survivor and the founder in principle of our group, that no civilized society should be at the service of death. And so we believe that President Biden still has a chance to do the right thing and commute that sentence.
If you can respond, Sister Simone, to exactly what he said.
Well, I think his point that the death penalty should not exist, period, and that the three remaining federal prisoners on death row should also be commuted. Quite frankly, life is life, death is death, and we choose life as people of faith. I agree with him, but I am so relieved that 37 of the 40 have had their sentences commuted. It still is a painful reality that three remain, but that we have made progress. It's a step forward, but we have more to do, especially now at the state level. We need to extend life in all situations and make sure that we are a people that values all life.
And then you have four men in military death row, Sister Simone.
Oh, yes. I mean, the thing that was new to me in this work was how many different death rows there are. I just thought there was a federal death row that we needed to address. And then to find out that even in the military, there is that is allegedly for our protection, we also have four people on death row. That is a painful reality that we should not allow to continue, but it does.
Herman Lindsay, can you talk about your own life experience? You're now executive director of Witness to Innocence, which advocates for the end of the death penalty. You yourself were on death row for 3 years before being exonerated by the Florida Supreme Court. Explain what happened.
My case was one of the basic cases that happens around the world. I was a young guy that was with a criminal record that was easily to be convicted, and this case was prosecuted horrendously on me. It was based on a guy's statement who turns out to be one of the prime suspects, and the Florida Supreme Court feel like he has some actual involvement in the case. But my experience on death row was an experience of uniqueness, and it helped me grow tremendously in life and open my eyes in life, because when I first went on death row, I was scared because it was like everybody pictured them as these monster people and you know, people with big psychological problems. But when I got on death row and I actually got to know these guys and we all became like family, you know, I realized that, you know, it is rehabilitation in these people. And these people can teach a lot of people in prison a whole lot of things to help the ones that do return to the streets, how to maintain and how to deal with things, especially trauma, without coming back to prison.
I think the figure is, what, 1 in 8 people on death row have been exonerated. Is that right?
Yeah, about that number. Here in Florida, it's a little bit, the number changes a little bit because we lead the nation in the most exonerations. We lead the nation with 30.
talk about Florida, because as Sister Simone Campbell just said, there are so many death rows in the United States. But you've got the federal death penalty, and that President Biden had put a moratorium on and now has granted clemency to the men. Well, has commuted their sentences to life without parole. But then there's the death rows in which thousands of people are on throughout the United States on state death row.
And I think those death rows are used in more of a political tool. Because I am a firm believer that death is not a punishment. You know, I grew up when I lost a pet, when I lost a friend, my mom would tell me it's okay, they gone off to a better place. Death is not a punishment, but most politicians use that to say, to put the fear into people and use it as a voting tool. But the death penalty around the United States, it differs in each state. So when we're talking about death penalty, you have to understand that the difference is the person who's over that state. For instance, DeSantis, I wish DeSantis would commute the row in Florida, you know, but because he's running on a tough on crime case, I feel like it's hard for to get him to do that. And that's because it's a political tool. Like for Trump, executed them 13 people, you know, right before his elections. You know, we hadn't had execution for 17 years. It's used as a political tool. Death is not no way decreasing violence, or is no way giving anybody closure. You know, closure comes in the justice at the time that a person is apprehended. You would apprehend someone for committing the crime. That is closure to the family instead of that person running around, not the death penalty.
Can you talk about the racial disparities on death row, Herman? If you've got, in this case, of the 37 men whose sentences were commuted, 15 are white, 15 are black, 6 are Latino, and 1 is Asian. Talk about it nationwide.
Well, nationwide is different. It depends on each state. For instance, Florida is majority black. You go to Texas or California, the majority is Latinos. You know, it all depends on the actual area, this actual state that you're in, that the ratio changes. But here in this situation with the federal, I think that the ratio was kind of balanced a little bit. You know, I don't see racism playing a part in that federal standard, but in the state standards, you see racism playing a part and many different ways.
Let me ask you about the three men who remain on federal death row. They are Jokhar Tsarnaev, convicted in the 2013 Boston bombing, Boston Marathon bombing, Dylan Roof, who was convicted in the mass shooting of the 9 black parishioners at Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. That was 2015. And Robert Bowers, who attacked Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue in 2018, killing 11 Jewish worshipers in the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history. Why do you believe, Herman, that they should have also had their sentences commuted?
I believe that because, you know, like I say, I believe in human life. I believe in humanity. I was reading an article where Trump said it's a slap in the face to the victim. Actually, I think by you executing them, it's a slap to the face of the victim, because if you execute them, that relieves them from all consequences of what they have done. What people don't understand is that when you're in prison, you know, when you're in prison, you have to take time out to think about what you have done. You have to think about you can't be there for your loved ones. You have to think about, is your child riding you? Are your child mad? It's so many things that you have to think about that is very traumatic to yourself when you during time. And to just pull them in one day and they tried to make it where you can execute more faster, but to actually bring that person in and execute them is like relieving them from any sentence that they had imposed on them. And something to think about is this, and I like to say this, suppose that you had a loved one that got murdered, and you taught that loved one that when someone passed away, they go off to a better place. And then you turn around, you sitting at home and you're watching